Okay, good enough. Good morning, everyone. It is 10 a.m. on Tuesday, September 7th, 2021. We are now via Zoom. We would normally be in our BCC conference room, but we're via Zoom for a general discussion on this Tuesday morning. Just a couple of items on the agenda this morning. One of them, right in the midst of everything else, there was emergency management. Emily Ring, we're going to hear from her. And also, we're going to have a presentation, Josephine County Firewise program presentation. Rick McClintock and Ben Whalen are both here to give us some insight on Firewise. And, you know, I think, well, I'll tell you what, I you know, the smoke this year probably has bothered me worse than it has any other year. And I, you know, being a longtime native resident of Josephine County and Grants Pass in general, I have never seen year after year after year after year of smoke. And I look at Douglas County. How much more of Douglas County can burn? I went up onto a mountaintop with the OMC board of directors, and we went up there, and as far as you could see out towards Glide and that way, every hillside, every mountain would burn plumb to the ground. And there's some salvageable black timber off of there, but that now has gone into the second year. And so it'll no longer be salvageable, it'll just be dead sticks out there. And now I understand it's still burning again. And Douglas can't afford that.
Yeah, it is.
You know, we still rely on timber receipts around here, and our hearts go out to our colleagues up in Douglas County. I'm going to reach out to Commissioner Freeman after this meeting and see if there's nothing we can do to help. At least I'll pass along that we're sure thinking about. So, but Emily, are you on with us today? If not, I'm going to go right to Rick McClintock. Rick, what do you got for us?
Morning, Commissioners. How are you?
Good morning.
Good. We're going to start off real quick. I think I'll start off just with my history and where I start from, and Ben Whalen's going to go in there, and then we'll get into
talking. He was around us.
I'm a retired battalion chief after like 27 years of fire service down in San Bernardino County. I was a strike team leader of Division Group Sioux, task force leader, and a USAR member. I've been all over the state of California fighting fire and seen the devastating effect of what wildland fires can do. Last year, a year ago, I was out in Talon and Phoenix with the Grants Pass Rogue Valley Task Force out there helping out with that fire, which was another devastating fire. So that's my history real quick. We'll turn it over to Ben.
Just me.
My name is Ben Wim. I work with the Oregon Department of Forestry as a forest officer and obviously the Firewise Community Coordinator.
Yeah,
I have a bachelor's degree in environmental studies with a concentration in sustainable forestry from Warren Wilson College. This is my ninth season with the Department of Forestry hauled out of Grants Pass Unit. Started off as an engine crew person, moved up to a forest officer, and recently I've also held a role as a natural resource specialist and forest technician. Worked in all corners of the county over my 9 years here, and I enjoy and look forward to working even longer. Rick?
All right.
Good.
Very good. Real quick history and why Firewise is Firewise. In the United States, there's 45 million homes that are at risk in the WUI areas, which is wildland urban interface areas. 72,000 communities are also at risk with that. Many of these fires have taken out unknown amount of structures. And the question was, how did some structures survive and how did some not survive? Why? So the researchers started. Jack Cohen was the lead researcher into WUI fires. Ember wash and excessive fuel loading, lack of proper building materials, improper maintenance to properties was the biggest problem and the biggest part of these things. So they came up with three zones. They came up with an immediate zone, which is the structure, and then 0 to 5 feet away from the structure. This is where science has told us you can have the biggest impact on your property by reducing the vulnerability of the embers. The next is 5 feet to 30 feet out. That is where we like to change the landscaping. We call it hardening landscaping. We want to implement careful landscaping and creating breaks that can influence and decrease fire behavior. The next zone, which is 30 to 100 feet up to 200 feet, our landscaping goal here is not to eliminate the fire, but to interrupt the fire's path. bring the fire down on the ground. Reduce those ladder fuels. Ladder fuels are from your feet up to about 10 feet up in the air. And reduce those and bring it down on the ground where you can get it to move low and slow, and it's easier to fight, easier to protect. There's been some great success stories. If you go on firewise.com, you can look for the Durango fire, and it's a great story on how they knew there was a Firewise community, and this area kind of got over there. The fire went to this area and reduced the risk to the city of Durango. And the fire department knew that, and it frees up resources tremendously. So with that said, we'll move it on to Ben right now, and he'll give you a little history on our local thoughts.
So how we implement the Firewise program locally here in Josephine County, just to start off, Josephine County has 22 current Firewise communities with 4 prospective communities. Hopefully they come into the fold by the end of the year, bringing that number up to 26. Within our 22 communities, we have 501 dwellings. With an average of 4 people per dwelling, you're looking at over 2,000 taxpaying Josephine County residents represented in our Firewise communities. As far as home evaluations for these communities, you're looking at hundreds of millions of dollars in home value associated just in our Firewise communities alone. All of these Firewise communities have to volunteer hours to do fuel reduction, to do defensible space creation, to do community outreach events within their communities. And these volunteer hours are then documented, submitted to Firewise program nationally. And the Firewise program, what that does is that puts a dollar amount on the amount of volunteer hours that they work. So for example, in 2012, the total number of volunteer hours calculated by Firewise for all the Firewise communities in Josephine County was $88,164.59. Now, bringing that up to 2020, our total moved up to $454,265.20. So you're looking at a 5-fold increase in savings for these communities from the 2012 levels up to the 2020 levels. I want to emphasize that these hours spent by our communities are volunteer. These are not funded by grants. And it's my personal opinion that without the direction and education provided by your Firewise community coordinators, by your wildfire leader, that this work would not be getting done on the ground and in our communities. And so the education surrounding defensible space, construction materials, evacuation, go plans, and more importantly, community connectedness empowers homeowners to retain this agency over their actions, retain agency over their properties, and that's what we provide in our model of Firewise. The community connectedness, that is critical. That is the keystone to establishing a functional and lasting Firewise community, and in turn, hardening our landscape to wildfires. Our old adage, or the adage that we use, is the old adage of give a man a fish, feed him for a day, teach a man to fish, and feed him for his lifetime. So if we go in and me and Rick do the defensible space creation on these properties for them, they get it once and they're not educated about it, and it's not a sustainable model. Whereas if we empower them, educate them, and motivate them to do that work themselves, retain agency over their own property, and you're going to see a more sustainable model of fuel reduction on the landscape. We like to see homeowners take responsibility for hardening their own homes, hardening their own properties. We like to educate homeowners to help retain their agency over their own property, and in turn, empowering homeowners to create their own defensible space so they're not relying on county, state, or federal sources for that defensible space creation, because in the event that those sources evaporate, then these homeowners are left without the education and then the means to do that work themselves. There was a 2-county survey in Colorado that found that the most important sources wildland urban interface residents related to acting on their own property were these informal social networks, guidance from local fire departments, and your county wildfire specialist. Your county wildfire specialist in this case is Rick and myself. And these informal social networks, that's a neighbor talking to a neighbor, that may be a local Facebook group. It's that newly painted house concept where you have one individual along the street that paints their house. More than likely, you're going to see subsequent neighbors along that same street begin to paint their house and fix up their house. It's the same story with defensible space. If we can go in and motivate and educate one individual along the street to do some defensible space work, the likelihood of subsequent residents in that same area doing defensible space work increases. And even if they don't do it, they're going to be interested in why their landscape looks like this. What's the benefit for those kind of scenarios? The study found that a higher risk perception in or previous experience of wildfire was also associated with higher mitigation levels. and the major wildfires in the area did little to change homeowners' overall attitudes towards wildfires, but it did increase their level of concern for their property, their landscapes, their pets, and their health. And that's exactly what we saw with the Alameda fire. After the Alameda fire, there was a serious uptick in the amount of assessments and the amount of requests for assessments because individuals were concerned about their property after seeing the devastation of that wildfire. And the researchers found that higher levels of mitigation activity were associated with having received information from local fire departments and county wildfire specialists, as well as talking with their neighbors about wildfires. So this education model is shown to increase the level of mitigation on the ground. A completely separate study in Ouray County, Colorado, found that homeowners tend to underestimate their wildfire risk compared to an expert assessment of their property. And that's very important, to have an expert assessment go out to make sure that these homeowners are adequately reducing the amount of wildfire fuel on their property to provide the most hardening possible. This research helps to further understand how education and outreach can play a role in moving homeowners to better understand the ongoing risk that wildfire poses in the wildland-urban interface so they can take appropriate steps to protect themselves and their property. These homeowners need to be educated about and motivated to perform this wildfire mitigation action on their property. And these homeowners value advice and guidance that is specific to their property, which suggests that site individuals by professionals may help to increase the mitigation action, which is exactly what we do. We go out and we give them a site-specific assessment. This isn't a boilerplate that we mass spam out to these homeowners. We go out and we understand that each site is unique and presents its own unique challenges, and that these homeowners request and are given a unique assessment. Now, as far as the grants are concerned, these FireWise sites provide an avenue for us to leverage the grant money back into the community. For the Dollar Mountain grant, for example, we have several FireWise communities in the area, and we were able to leverage the amount of work that those FireWise communities did to achieve, to get and secure that grant funding to do the work in subsequent areas around these communities. On the other side of things, we have the Slate Creek grant, and that was due in part to the U.S. Forest Service doing fuel reduction projects on the public land out there, and then us being able to leverage that work to bring defensible space money down to do defensible space creation on home sites in the Slate Creek drainage. Moving forward to regulations and some insurance issues that we've run into, just right off the bat, if you are a USAA member and part of a FireWise community, USAA will offer a discount for just being part of a FireWise community. Here in Josephine County, there are no regulations regarding hazardous fuel abatement, nor would I imagine that any resident would want those regulations in place. And more so, insurance companies, from our point of view, have yet to create appropriate mitigation requirements as part of their underwritings. Most of the time, they're requiring too much mitigation for a satisfactory level of risk. They're requiring too much. I've personally helped resolve three insurance conflicts since May. And so here locally, what we're left with is a lack of local regulations and insurance companies not having adequate underwriting. And so that's forcing these local landowners to go seek educated counsel to reduce the risk on their own property. And that educated counsel comes in the form of your FireWise community coordinators. Furthermore, this study in Ouray County found that the informal social networks were more important than any institutional arrangements in terms of promoting the FireWise mitigation actions. And so it wasn't the institutional arrangements, it wasn't the regulations, it wasn't the underwritings, it was the neighbors talking to neighbors, of the community connectedness that had more mitigation actions present on the ground. Now, personally, from a background in wildland firefighting here in Josephine County, I know that if I have a neighborhood that has created a defensible space and has maintained that defensible space, that's an area that we can go in as firefighters and safely stop the forward progression of the fire. We can make a stand in these locations to prevent further loss associated with firefighting. As far as ODF is concerned, these FireWise sites rarely present hazards to our surrounding communities. Rarely does ODF respond to public regulated use complaints within our FireWise communities because these individuals are so well educated. They know what it means whenever we move our peacock signs from moderate to high to extreme and what regulations those changes come with. And so the old saying that $1 in prevention is worth $5 in suppression.
And so if we take the $454,000 in volunteer hours that our local FireWise communities have put in, volunteer in their communities on the ground, you're looking at over $2.2 million of potential fire suppression savings costs for the county alone. And with that being said, I'm going to turn it back over to Rick to kind of walk us through what our typical assessment would look like.
Commissioner, we'll take questions at the end.
Yeah, we'll have lots of questions. Yeah, we'll have questions if you guys interrupt us anytime if you want any questions. But yeah, we have some questions. We're almost done here, sir. So how do we get assessments? We do community educations. We were doing a lot of meetings before the pandemic hit. Ricky and I were doing one or two a week, community educations, outreaches, and those type of things where we're meeting with communities. Not last October, over October before, we had a big open house out at Home Depot. Those are the type of things that we were doing before the pandemic. Now we've kind of changed our strategy. We are still doing community meetings, but we're doing them outside, at the end of the cul-de-sac, somebody's driveway, some other out there. Somebody gives us a call, we get involved with neighborhood watches, and those are how we kind of get in and start talking to those people and what we do. So it can be different ways of community education and talking to them. We can do a single home, but we'd like to see multiple people involved so we can get that community and get multiple houses involved in this hardening of the structure. So when we go out to an area, one of the first things we do, we want to see if we have accessibility into that property. We have this nice big driveway that we can get in, we can get a fire equipment in there, back there, turn around, get a safe area for us to go. Do we have gates? Are the streets signage? Do we have street signs? Do we have numbers out front and those type of things? As we introduce ourselves and talk to the person, we start talking about Citizens Alert. That'll be one of the first things we talk about. We give them a handout on the peacock sign. Again, another handout on embers, reducing the wildfire risk, and then another one from OSU on before the fire strikes, and stuff like that. So then we start going through the assessment itself. We start going from the house itself, looking at from the peak of the house down to the foundation, rain gutters and those type of things. Are they properly cleaned up? Are they not plastic rain gutters and those type of things? Do we have 1/8 screen hardware cloth on our vents and our crawl space items? So we work from 0 to 5 feet out. We start doing recommendations on 5 feet to 30 feet out on removing junipers and those type of things. And then we go out to the 30 to 100 feet, up to 200 feet, and talking about ladder fuels and reducing the fuels and those type of moving your firewood, what to do if there's an evacuation, how to harden your house in evacuation, getting hoses out, putting things away, and all those type of things. All those type of actions is what we do. We give them a written assessment, we hand it to them or we email it to them. We answer all questions that they have or concerns or that they have about their properties. We also, if they have questions about contractors and who can do that, we have a long list of vetted contractors. We can't recommend anybody, but they can do their research on who they would like to have do their work. Our aim is to create new FireWise communities because we know it works. We know it, we understand it works, and there is the science to prove that communities do well in those type of areas. We help our new community leader with the paperwork that needs to be done, the assessment, the recommendation, the action plan, a yearly event. Every community has to have a yearly event. It could be a chipper event, it could be an evacuation plan, it could be a CPR class. Those are something that they have to have every year. Once you become a FireWise community, we have a chipper. We will come out and chip for free. You cut it, we chip it, and we've probably chipped well over 150 cubic yards this year alone. Ben and myself have in several houses. Those are type of the things that we do for FireWise communities. We'll help them with the state application so they can get their cert. That is probably the nutshell of an assessment. You're more than welcome to come out with us and do one, or we can come by your properties and we can give you an assessment on your property. Piece of cake. We like to do it. I like to go out and see people's houses and visit with them. I enjoy it totally. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Ben.
So just some brief statistics for FireWise here in the past few years. Since November of 2019 through the end of 2020, your community coordinators went to 127 assessments, 33 community outreach events, 87 meetings, 188 public contacts. From the beginning of 2021 through mid-August 2021, we've done 109 assessments, 9 community outreach events, 34 meetings, and 127 public contacts. You see the community outreach events and meetings numbers are down, and that's due in part to COVID complications. However, we are on pace for a record-setting assessment year. Like Rick had mentioned, we've done approximately 150 cubic yards of chipping. We did 20 cubic yards of Scotch broom pulling from Forest Hills Firewise community. Overall, 40 hours of fuel reduction work here and there. Rick and myself put in. As far as grant work is concerned, the Dollar Mountain grant, which is a big one that we're working on right now, we have had 155 acres treated and completed. We have another 150 acres pending. It's currently in the bidding process. We did 37 acres in the Cook and Starlight areas, 3 acres in the Forest Hills community, 2 acres at Dawn in Redwood, 10 acres at the College Heights community, 5 acres in James Drive. And like I mentioned earlier, there's going to be 12 acres completed by the end of the year in the Slate Creek drainage, bringing the total for the end of the year at 344. I want to emphasize that all of these grants, bar the Slate Creek grant, stipulated that the work must be done adjacent to the Firewise communities. So once again, we are leveraging the work that these Firewise communities are doing on the ground, the volunteer work, to secure funding for these grants to do fuel reduction work outside of the Firewise communities. That Slate Creek grant, like I said earlier, kind of worked on the opposite model where the U.S. Forest Service had done the work, and we leveraged that work to do defensible space creation on the residents in Slate Creek. And just kind of finishing here, the grant work is great. It does great for the landscape, and it's fantastic when it's available. But what I want to make clear is that the volunteer work put in by our local Firewise communities will be resilient and long-lasting. That work does not fluctuate with the ebb and flow of grant money in and out of the county. These individuals are motivated and educated to do the work themselves. And as you see more Firewise communities grow within Josephine County, you're going to see more defensible space being made. And it'll be made sustainably and naturally, where the county or the state or the federals don't have to put money in to get that work done. And I'm going to hand it over to Rick for some of our future plans in Firewise.
Very good. Real quick, the Dollar Mountain grant was a grant of $438,000. It was the largest grant given at that time from ODF. There was roughly $700,000, and we got well over half of that money, so I'm pretty proud of that kind of work we did. So our future plans at Firewise, we'd like to increase our communities, always want to increase our communities and our outreach. Our educational part, we want to always have education and outreach. We want to talk about risk reduction and safety and education. We want to do our at-risk communities in geographical isolated areas. And these areas are Williams, Cave Junction, Wolf Creek, Sunny Valley. Those are some significant areas that we would like to spend more time down in and doing fuel reduction and education, hardening of those structures. We were always applying and looking for new grants. Grants are always a roll of the dice. You either get them or you don't. We were fortunate to get a couple good grants, so we're pretty good about that. Makes us happy. Also, we'd like to review, we are going to review large incidents and evacuations. North Lake Tahoe, they evacuated 50,000 people out of their community. That would be an interesting one to talk to and find out how well that went and learn from their lessons. We'd also review other Firewise communities, lessons learned, what works for them and what doesn't. We'd like to set up a general email for Firewise and also more social media accounts and stuff like that. And with that, we'll open up for any questions and comments or concerns.
Okay, I'll open it up to commissioners. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for your presentation. I know we've got some questions. I certainly have been writing down as we've been going along just questions. I think they're pretty generic, but shouldn't be too terribly hard to answer. So Commissioner Fowler and Commissioner Beartrager, which one wants to go first? Commissioner Fowler, right?
Yep, I'm just a pain commissioner. Let me go first.
There you go.
No, I remember when this program first started. I was the mayor of the city of Grants Pass, and we weren't sure, what it was gonna, end product was going to look like. But look at us now. Years later, we have communities that are fully embracing this. Those communities feel more resilient because they are. That Dollar Mountain project is a huge buffer for the city of Grants Pass. And so I'm so glad to have such a large fire component in that Dollar Mountain, because it'll be fun for the people who love to hike and bike and walk their dogs and stuff, but also it'll really help with those neighborhoods that are on those vulnerable mountain sites right around that whole area. So I'm glad that this timely program came along when it did, because it is shown to be successful. And I know, like I said, the citizens have embraced it. You've got citizen leaders in different areas, and that's really helpful. We really appreciate that, so thank you.
Commissioner Beartree.
Yeah, well, thanks, everybody. And Jason, that was quite a script when you have when you have time, can you email me your script so I have it for future reference? You rattled off a whole bunch of statistics that I couldn't possibly absorb.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, Rick, you coming from San Bernardino, when in my previous lifetime, when I used to spend a lot of time choking on smoke, I'll tell you what, I was down there for the Olds and the Grand Prix fires, and I'll tell you what, you want to see some fast-moving fires. I don't think there's a fire on this planet that can top those fast-moving fires. One suggestion I have that, and this has just come from my experience, when you deal with these landowners, it's easy for us fire folks to sit in a room and talk about all this stuff, but it's total Greek to an average landowner. And one of the tools I used to do, I used to start the conversation on defensible space, and it's pretty easy when you just whip out the old fire line handbook and says, well, you know, if we were going to create a safety area right here, this is the formula using estimated flame lengths. And when you walk them through that formula and tell them what has to be done to create a safe area, it blows their mind. Most people do not realize how much that. So that's always a good way. That's just really, and walk them through the formula, you know? And that really is an eye-opener for residents. So I always said the most important thing is to prepare for the fire before it ever starts. And a few years ago, well, it's been more than that, Carl, but I was actually covering for you because you had a few days off. But I'll tell you what, driving out in that Jones Creek and jump off area and all those areas, I was just like, gosh, doesn't anybody mow any grass anymore? Doesn't anybody do anything even kind of prevent from a fire spread? It's pretty crazy when you're driving down those long driveways in those areas and the grass, and it's August and the grass is 4 feet tall and it's touching each side of your pickup. You're like, hey, this ain't gonna be a pretty sight. So I really do. I think it's education. And if you use that tool of you just start, well, if we had to create a safety zone, here's the formula. Man, that has really been a good tool for me in the past. So thanks for everything you're doing. I support you 100%, and I guess we just keep pushing.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
The big loser, other than the homeowner, but the big loser financially in any of these things is the insurance companies. And you mentioned USAA, Ben. You mentioned that they had an incentive program. Why aren't all insurance companies getting on board with something like that? But you belong to a legitimate FireWise group and area, and you've done all the stuff and spent the money, that they give you some sort of a discount or a box that checks and says you get a 10% discount on your fire portion of your homeowner's insurance to give you some incentive to keep that up. That's number one. Number two is everything is pointed that the government needs to fix everything. So no matter what it is, if there's no, you know, if you're trying to put this onto the homeowner, and I appreciate that fact, and let them know that, hey, we do need to pay attention to this stuff. But then they turn around and say, well, the government's got to take care of it, and I don't need to because the government's always taking care of it. That's what is printed in the printed word. The government's here to fix everything. But I appreciate the FireWise program, and Commissioner Fowler and I was on the city council at that time. And boy, we saw some real headways in that, up like in the east or western Grants Pass foothills. That, boy, they cleaned that all up, and it before and after is really something that you really do examples of this defensible areas, it's obvious when you say, this is what it was before, like the home improvement shows, you know, this is what we came into, this is what we left, this was the investment, and they go, wow, I think we can do that. Now, when you mention, you know, why don't they cut the grass along the lane? As soon as it starts turning warm, bang, we initiate fire season, no more cutting the grass, no more this, no more that. And if you're a farmer, which you are, Urban, you understand that, hey, you can cut it and it'll grow back because it hasn't gone to seed yet. You have to let the grasses go to seed and then you can cut them and they'll stay down. They won't come back. But we don't do that. We encourage everybody. I've got friends that have lots around town and the city goes in there and tells them, you get that cut down. So they spend the money to get it cut down. And 3 weeks later, it's up almost to what they cut it down. But whoops, now it's fire season. Can't get that old chain flail out there and get it mowed down again, or the rotary, because it's fire season. And it went from okay, get it done, to okay, it's fire season, and why didn't you get it done? So we've got to at least hedge a little bit or use a day-to-day common sense approach to saying, you know, and the burn days. There's still six, I bring up these six piles of debris up there on the Merlin off-ramp, and they've been there for 3 years, maybe 4 years now, and not able to be burned because it's a, that's going to be a big fire. I'm not arguing that. But why we can't do something in the middle of winter when it's pouring down rain and get those debris piles put down, the rain will knock the smoke down, but it, nope, it's an inversion. So therefore, the Department of Environmental Quality says, no, it's air stagnation. Well, damn it, go outside right now. If this isn't air stagnation and pollution, I don't know what to tell you. That just irritates the heck out of me that we can't do anything in the wintertime because we might upset somebody's breathing. Well, my breathing's upset all summer long for, what, five seasons in a row now? And it's just not my breathing. It's the tourist season around here and a whole bunch of other stuff. It just ain't, this summer just hasn't been fun for anyone. And they're starting to work on people's nerves, as you can tell by my thing. How many acres total do we have? We got 344 acres that we've treated. Ben, how many acres would you estimate need to be treated in Josephine County? I imagine it's in the thousands of acres that can really be fixed.
Yeah, you know, a lot of that does come down to it's public land. So yeah, hundreds of thousands of acres. And as you're well aware, it grows back, so it needs to be seasonally treated, right? You're looking at a five-year rotation for a lot of this stuff. So it's like painting the Golden Gate Bridge. You get done with one section, you're starting again at the very beginning. And so it's very difficult. You know, you can get started some section, you can start in some area, but you have to come back to that same area where you started in 10 years later and do the same work again. I don't have the answer to that.
But some of that, though, when you've trim the trees up to 10 feet, you don't have to come back and do that part of it again. You know, it's the understory. If you start getting some brush up, you need to clean that up. So maintenance to me, well, I live in town, so my maintenance, I know what I've got to do around my place, and it's not fun. But I think maintenance would probably be a lot better than just starting, it would be a lot easier than just starting in on it.
It's a mixed bag, because you got mortality rates and stuff.
Right.
And
right.
One of the analogies I've used in the Senate was, it's not like, just think of it as mowing your lawn. You don't go out and mow your lawn and say, hey, I've done that, I never have to do that again. So that's the analogy I used to always use. But maintenance, there's all kinds of things in maintenance. You got litter, you got mortality of trees going, constantly going on. And one thing about a forest environment, it never stays the same. Never.
Well, I think, you know, like I said, I think the big thing that's frustrating to me is the fire season and burn days. You know, we're asking people to mitigate their problem and then tying their hands so they can't. And, you know, I appreciate the chipper thing. I know you've done that out in the Williams area a couple times. You know, I had lunch with Chief Better the other day, and they've got out there in that Williams Fire District, they've got a pretty good program going on there. They work with FireWise, you know, carefully with FireWise, and I think that's a good relationship to have. Another thing is we're in the midst of, we haven't yet had first reading on a personal property deal. If we see I don't know if there's an element in there, if we see actual fire danger, if we can recommend, or because, you know, if you've got a, if fire danger is one of the elements of safety that we can go in onto a property with, because you've got five or six of these old trailer houses on an electrical cord through dry grass, that you are now, if that all torches off, you're putting the whole neighborhood at risk. So is that something, you know, we're right in the process of going over that in the next week. We're going to do the final print on that before we have the first reading on it, and our WBS later on this month. So I think I'll look at that also, see if there might be an element we want to put in on that, you know, to see if that can be put in legally, or instead of our legal department, see if that might help out a little bit. I think that's about it. If you were to, I'm going down to South Lake Tahoe, I think a little off subject here, but you know, with that thing headed towards South Lake Tahoe, I would think, you know, and you, maybe you can help me out here, Ben, especially, because if what would stop the Forest Service or whoever and down there or even around here, we see a fire going towards a residential area, and yeah, it's 4 miles away, but send bomber after bomber after bomber and paint a red buffer zone all the way around that residential district so it can't get within 200 yards of it, or 100 or 1,000 yards, and just paint it all red. I think I wouldn't mind fire retardant on my neighborhood if it kept the fire back and made a space that it couldn't jump.
I think not only the expense, and you kind of hit it there with it's a fire retardant, it's not a fire stopper, right? And so if you have a running crown fire, you can paint whatever you want to red and it's gonna burn right through it. It's a full comprehensive approach to fires like that. First of all, you need to bring it out of the canopy and onto the ground where it's first of all safe to work with wildland firefighters, but you need that ground component. You can't fight a fire specifically and only from the air. You need ground troops on the ground to dig the line, to mop up the stumps, to ensure that it is out. There is something to be said for a large air contingent to fires. It's also very dependent on the fuel model. I know down in parts of Nevada, for example, where it's very grassy, they can put fires out with retardant because that fuel model doesn't carry a lot of energy with it. Whereas if you have a large stand of timber that's crowning off, it's going to have a much larger energy component coming out of there. So it's kind
that's
of...
That's my argument against seats, Tom. Go ahead, Ben. Sorry to interrupt you.
I didn't have much else to say on that.
Other thing, Dan, that you have to remember is when you have a wind-driven fire, the air assets aren't that reliable because it just disperses the retardant and the wind-driven is blowing embers across, and if there's receptors for those embers, you're going to have spots and turns into a whack-a-mole system. So, listen, when you have a wind-driven fire, I don't know if I can say this in a public meeting, but you're kind of just screwed, period. Not many tools in the toolbox in a wind-driven fire, my friend.
But, you know, this is where the FireWise comes in, and the hardening of your structure, putting that 8-inch screen, and, having those receptors, like you said, Mr. Bearsugar, to those embers landing, you know, that is a huge bit of it, and that's part of our education of it, is when we ask people to evacuate, you know, we put your cushions away, make sure your firewood is away from your property, you know, in May, it should be away from your property, 30 feet away. Those little things would burn your house down, the broom that's left up against your house, your doormat, that's where it burns your house down, your rain gutters aren't cleaned out. Those little things are what burn it to the ground. And, you know, you'll see video after video in these fires, these wind-driven fires. Why is that house a mile away burning it to the ground? Well, it's because it had that receptor where that little ember landed, and it took off and ran like crazy people. So
I think in the instance of Southern California, everybody had to have a tile roof because fire can't penetrate a tile roof, but it sure as hell blows up underneath it.
Yeah.
And usually all those fires down there, usually you can have, you know, the embers get up in the attic and then the whole thing's gone.
Yeah, they get through those vents or they don't have a bird stop on those types of things, or you just have debris, you know, a lot of leaf litter or tree litter up on top of those trees. Yeah, and it's you know, we used to call them in Ms. Bridger, we used to call winners and losers, what we called a long time ago. And you would go and put your effort on hardening that structure on those ones that are saveable, that I have my hour that I can clean up around, and that one that the person has never done anything, and there's, you know, a bunch of debris and trash and those type of things around their structures. It's hard, it makes it difficult.
A lot of stuff landowners, simple stuff landowners can do. You can make plywood covers for your vents. I've seen lots of times what happens is you have a low pressure system in the attic and you have a high pressure system on the outside of the house from the fire, and you just watch those embers being sucked right into those attic vents, where if you had a piece of plywood over those attic vents, that wouldn't happen. So there's all, I mean, we're getting down in the weeds now.
I think the biggest
problem is going to be able to get this information out to a lot of landowners. That's going to be the biggest. That is the hurdle that is in front of us.
Well, the thing I like about the FireWise program, it empowers the homeowner to protect his own space. You know, you can do this. You know, a lot of people think, oh, that's just too much for me. But I like your list that you can say of contractors, say, yeah, pick up the phone and call the guy. You know, if it's, they'll let you know exactly what's taken, but they'll be there for a week maybe. And when it's all done, you know, you can rest assured that at least you've got a chance. You know, you love your home. I don't even want to think of my house burned down. After 70 years on this planet, I've got an awful lot of stuff that I hold dear to my heart. If I didn't want to at least spend some of my hard-earned money trying to protect that, you know, shame on me. But, you know, let's keep up with this FireWise program. It really, in the long run, it's in its infancy, to be quite honest with you. But now you are establishing sort of a track record of success, of these successes. And, you know, I know Ricky. She is a dynamite in the room. She's really good about getting people charged up and everything. And I think you've got a good team here that can spread this message. And anything we can do as a county commissioner, now we're not going to, you know, we're not the fire experts here at Herman. You know, he's got a lot of experience in the fire there, and I don't. But, you know, we're certainly on hand to endorse and encourage people to look at the FireWise program, pay attention to the mailer you get in the mail, and take it to heart, then walk out. Hey, let's take a look at it. You know, we've read the thing, both sides of the card, now let's go out and see how this applies to us. And don't overlook it. Don't fool yourself into thinking you're all ready to go when you walk by that big stand of junipers on the west side of the house. Because that's something as simple as that could be what makes your house there or not there. So I appreciate you guys coming in. Anything further from anybody?
Thank you for your time. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Keep us abreast of what's going on. Let us know if you get any luck with the burn dates and the fire season with the EPA and all the other people that seem to have a way in. And tell them, okay, I want you to go outside for the last 60 days and tell me this is the way you want it. And it was not caused by FireWise. It was caused by maybe the lack of. And we need to fire something. I think we're kind of like COVID, where it's going to be here for a long time. It'll come in different directions, different fuels. You know, flames are going to be hotter over here than they are over here. And that canyon, this and that, this wildland fire, and they're all going to be different. But the result's the same. A lot of money. And they all look to the government to figure out how to fix it. And we should do our part, but I don't think by any means it's our sole responsibility as government. You know, I pay my taxes. Well, you know, very little of your tax money actually goes to what we're talking about. You know, it's all done by grants and applying for this, that, and the other thing. Maybe it should be a little different than that. So glad to have you guys on board. Thank you. Keep us tuned as to what's going on in your world. And we always like to hear from you. Okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. If you have any questions, please call us.
Thank you guys.
Be safe. Have a good week.
Moving on to item number two, which is additional subject to matters from commissioners. We have a special presentation from Wally Hicks, our legal counsel here. And it is pertaining to a letter to remove Josephine County from Senator Ron White's proposed land lock. I think this is a real hot topic, and it's one that's like the pot of soup on the stove, it's coming to a boil. So let's hear what you got there, Wally.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board, and all others here gathered. Hopefully you've received the latest draft of the letter, and the letter and the current draft bears some adjustments that were requested by Jay Meredith, by American Mineral Research. And so, can everyone confirm that you have a copy of the letter?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, that's affirmative. And so this, to my knowledge, is lined up for consideration by the board tomorrow if you wanted to send it. But this is an opportunity to at least discuss if you wanted to make any changes to the existing draft. And of course, those will be formally proposed tomorrow. But it's a chance to talk about the topic and the letter and confirm if you want to go forward with approving it.
I'm fine with it, Mr. Chair.
Just for process, we noticed that the letter will be looked at in the WBS tomorrow and not its content.
Yep, and I'm looking up right now just to confirm. I didn't think to confirm that before the meeting, but I can do it real quick. And that's item 5.
Okay. All right, good.
Tomorrow's consent calendar, yes. So
if it's okay for us to cross out, add a little something, whatever. We're not before tomorrow's meeting because we're not actually approving the content until tomorrow.
Exactly. And so,
okay. just for the folks out there, said, well, I didn't get to read the letter before you did. And this is a work in progress. And but we do have time is of the essence on this one particularly. And so any problem with anybody from the commissioners moving this forward to the WBS tomorrow for consideration?
No, it looks good.
Okay, sounds real good, Wally. You'll be hearing from us if we have any changes whatsoever. Looks good though, so far. Okay?
Okay, very good.
Okay, any other matters from commissioners?
No, I'll
share tomorrow's WBS.
Okay, sounds real good. Then with that, we'll be adjourned at 10:47 a.m. Have a good day, gentlemen.